To me, Shepherd is a place of hope. It's a place that allows families a break from their reality, and a break from the excruciating effects of poverty. Shepherd steps in when the rest of the world steps out. That's really how I view it. And they provide not only like great services. I mean, yes, we have our academy, we have our after school program, and we have our summer program, and those are all great, and those are great for a community center, but we take care of the entire family. And I think that that's what Shepherd is. A lot of the times people think of community centers just dealing with children, but what they don't realize is that children, their behaviors are affected by their family life. And if you don't address family life, then you're not gonna get to the root of the problem. And I think that's what Shepherd does.
Basically, I grew up here on the Nary side of Indianapolis. I grew up in a very unstable home. I came to Shepherd when I was 14. I was in middle school at the time. Got connected with Shepherd, and you know, the one thing that I found when I came to Shepherd was a support system that I never had before. Multiple people that really invested and fed into my life to really make a difference, who encouraged me and inspired me to continue to pursue even when things got tough and things were hard, that I could push on and that I could make it. So it's great for me to have the opportunity to come back after I graduated from college to serve on staff here as the director of programs, and to be able to now encourage students with my story to share with them that they can make it too, and then to provide the staff around them to be able to give them that same support that I found when I started coming here in middle school.
Hi. How's everybody doing this morning? Good. My name's Rex Fisher. I am the Director of Development at Shepherd Community. But before that, I am a follower of Christ, husband to a wonderful wife, Gabby, and father to three awesome kids, Everly, Daniel, and Eleonora. And we live in the inner city of Indianapolis on the Near East Side, and have now for about 8-9 years. Wasn't always that way, obviously. Didn't always work at Shepherd Community Center. Actually, before that, I lived up on the Northwest Side, my wife and I. I worked at a firm, a consultancy that worked with professional sports teams and entertainment firms. Around pricing, price optimization. Sounds riveting, I know. And my wife taught at Pike Township and then Carmel Clay Schools. And as a way to diversify our income, we started to buy up investment property. That was our first exposure to the inner city. We bought up homes on the Near East Side, and we were exposed to a couple of realities very quickly. One, that these were the neighborhoods of the working poor in our city. A lot of families, single-parent families working multiple jobs to just make ends meet. A lot of parents working out of state and sending money home to children who are raising their younger siblings. A lot of kids with nowhere to go, a lot of homeless youth. Some real challenges, and often what we see in the lives of the poor is this tremendous stress of where am I going to get my next meal? Is the car going to get me to work? Are my parents or my children going to stay healthy so that I can go to work? And if any of this is disruptive, am I going to lose my job? Am I going to have a place to stay? Are we going to be homeless? Because in these realities, when you can only look to the next 24 hours, homelessness and hunger happens really, really quickly. Really, really quickly. And we were confronted with these realities as we started to buy and rehab properties. And it just dug on us. God started to kind of just that tickle, that little, like, you just, you hear him talking and you kind of want to brush it away at first. He's like, hey, I want you here. I want you here. And I remember coming home one day and sitting on my couch, saying to my wife, I think the Lord is calling us to move to downtown, to the inner city. And she did the natural thing in response, so she started to cry. And I wasn't far behind her. And to be perfectly honest, we stuck our fingers in our ears for about 9 months. Because it was terrifying. And it was hard. And we didn't know what the path looked like. And we were scared. And God was very good to us in that time. He was wonderful in softening our hearts and bringing others around us to speak in truth and grace. And slowly we started to gain a vision of what could be. And so we sold our home moved into a home down on the Near East Side, surrounded by vacant homes, but we still had neighbors because there were squatters. They were actually wonderful people. But we didn't know that. I mean, I remember the first night laying in bed. It had been raining all day. Of course, we were moving in the rain, and we're laying there. And we'd come from this suburb on the small golf course and down. Now we're in the, it's nice and quiet, and we lay down, and just the sounds of the city are there. We're laying there, we're exhausted, and we can hear like two cats fighting outside, and like sirens are going off, and people are nobody in the city actually like gets out of their car and rings the doorbell. They just use the doorbell that's in their car already. And so we're just, and some guy's banging on the door across the street, yelling at his wife that he needs a shoe, and she's obviously kicked him out, and it's getting heated, and I just hear my wife start to cry again. And, husbands, have you ever been in that situation where you just start to think, what did I do? What have we done? We didn't feel safe. We didn't understand our neighbors. We didn't understand their mentality, where they were coming from, the realities that they faced, and they didn't understand us. And we spent the next few years doing, I think, what we thought were some very noble things, or things we that would help. And what we ended up doing in a lot of ways was we helped people stay in generational poverty, right where they were at. We tried to launch a church, and that folded after 3 years. Again, we were missing some stuff, and it was really difficult. And so, actually, I'd like to just take like the next like 60 seconds before we go any further, and I just want to actually hear from you about, can we just get like a few words, a handful of words that describe kind of what comes to your mind when you think of people in poverty? Like what describes them? And it's okay, look, you're not going to offend me. Let's just be really honest in the answers. It's okay. What comes to mind? Who's going to be the first? Hopeless. All right. What else? Lack of money. What else? Lost. These are good. Dangerous. Lack of education and skills. All right, one more. Desperation. I love these. Oh, and now I have to remember how to spell desperation. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, we're going to come back to this in just a little bit, and I have to figure out. Good. Okay. I learned in the first service that if I don't do that, this paper starts going all over the place and it really loses punch. So we're going to come back to that in a second. So after these first few years, my wife and I realized we had two problems. One, we did not understand the people that we were trying to help. We didn't know how to sustainably and effectively walk alongside the poor. And that was really tough. It was really frustrating. I'm sure many of you have had a situation where you've tried to help, and that might, see, there it goes. That might have ended in a way, we're going to try the other side, in just a way of maybe feeling like you were taken advantage of, maybe in a way that just didn't end the way that you thought. I remember one time my wife and I and some others came together to try to get this one neighbor a car, and like in a week, it was wrecked. I mean, just destroyed. And it was frustrating. It was challenging. And so we didn't understand where they were coming from. We didn't understand how to help. We also had a proximity issue for what we were trying to do. See, while we felt called to that area, I was still traveling about half the month all over the U.S. For my job, and my wife was teaching in Carmel. So while we had an address, we didn't have much of a presence. And we really didn't know how to allocate the time that we did have and the things that were helpful. And so we started to look for ways to vocationally gain understanding and more of a presence in the neighborhood. I ended up at Shepherd Community Center. My wife ended up at the Oaks Brookside campus. And we started to look into this and learn through those organizations and through some of our own research on how do we gain this understanding. What is, where are the people that we're serving, where are they coming from, and how do we effectively work with them, know them, minister to them? And we started to look at Scripture. And one of the Scriptures that really came out, popped out for us was Psalm 82, 3 and 4. About, you know, how, what does Scripture say about engaging the poor? It says, defend the weak and the fatherless. Uphold the cause of the poor and the oppressed. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. And this was really important, the back end of that, deliver them from the hand of the wicked. Because something that we don't always understand in our city is that there are a lot of people in poverty who do have some funds that are being taken advantage of. There are often landlords who are threatening, hey, if you don't, you know, pay, I'm going to do this. I might call CPS, or you'll be, you know, out of your home. We do understand also landlords have to make some money, and sometimes money isn't there. There is, when that goes to a threatening a mode, when you have a situation where you might have some people who are undocumented here that are threatening, hey, if you don't pay, as long as you are paying, I'll take your money, but if you don't pay, I'm going to call INS and you're going to be out of this country. We have situations where people try to set up investment schemes and different ways to take advantage of their money. We actually had this happen in my own family. My mother-in-law was taken for thousands of dollars in an insurance scam in an attempt to take care of my wife. We'll get into their story in a little bit. We started to look also, one of the other scriptures that was really impactful for us was James 1:27. Religion that God and our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. The last part of that one's really impactful. Man, how do you keep from being polluted by the world? It's everywhere. It's the world. It's we're in it. It's here, but we're not of it, right? Okay. It just comes at you. And it's really hard to understand how to not be stained by this world. But one thing that we did find is as we crossed over socioeconomic boundaries and as we started to gain an understanding for how to come alongside these people in different ways, in different capacities, some of that staining started to come away. Our shift, our perspective started to change a little bit. We started to actually learn a little bit from those that we were engaging with and actually be ministered to as well. And so, you know, at this point, I kind of wonder, you know, what are you thinking? Is it a little uncomfortable? Maybe even a little irritating, right? To, you know, we've all had some negative experiences here. My guess is we've all had some nonprofit or ministry that is often told a really good story, maybe transactionalized us, just kept asking for money, never really sat down and told us what we were doing. And we looked at engaging the poor. We didn't feel like it was tremendously impactful. It just kind of went on. And it didn't have an enduring fuel. So I get the tension. I do. I get the frustration. I get when you get in the off-ramp and you see a guy holding a sign there, you know, and it's just you trying not to make eye contact, right? I mean, it's like, you know, you don't know what he's going to use the money for. It could very well be for drugs or alcohol. You just don't know. That's tough. My goal is not to stand in the face of that. It's just to maybe bring a little shift in perspective on it. It's okay to feel a little irritated in that. It's okay. So how does God engage those in poverty? What I love about the way that Christ works with those in poverty and brokenness is that he meets them where they're at, right? He engages people where they are. In Luke 18, you see a series of kind of stories and engagements that Christ has. And he comes and steps into people's realities and meets them there. He gives relevant teaching and relationship. So to the disciples, he gives the parable of the persistent widow going to the crooked judge, you know, who says, you know, okay, fine, since you've asked so many times, I will do it. And Christ says, you know, if a crooked judge will hear a persistent widow's need, how much more so will my Father? To the self-righteous, he gave the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector in the temple. To the children, he said, come, be, to be enjoyed and to enjoy. To the wealthy, he said, sell everything and come follow me. And holding the mirror up, right, and loving well in that. He predicts his own death for the third time to the disciples, and they're confused by it. They're really confused by it. But he's loving them well in the process. It's going to be a multi-stage process of reaffirming to them what is to come and what they are to do. And then after that, he restores the sight of a beggar by walking by him and calling out and saying, hey, bring him here, and ask him one question is, what do you want? And he doesn't make everything okay. He doesn't, even to the beggar. The beggar still has challenges and problems after that. But he meets people where they are, and he comes alongside them. And he speaks truth, and he loves well. In Luke 7, I love the imagery just in when the prostitute is there at Jesus' feet, inner poverty, inner brokenness, washing his feet with her tears, and drying his feet with her hair. Because she's there in that, and she is loved, she's forgiven, and there's a tremendous freedom in that, in grace. You know, it's interesting, the mentality of poverty is cyclical. I have this stress, right? And I don't have a linear model of overcoming this stress. So I escape, and then that stress comes back, and I escape again. It's why you often will walk into a home in the inner city that might have the windows smashed out and holes in the roof and see a 50-inch flat screen sitting in the living room. And that used to really frustrate me, right? But the reality is that entertainment is one of the biggest escapes that the poor have and can access. Often you will see a lot of used car shops, right, with some decently nice cars, some not so nice. But often you'll see the poor driving cars that are well outside of their income means, which will then be repossessed within the next 30 days. Because there's this tension of, I should be this way. I want, you know, to be here. I'm not, and I have no idea how to get there. And I'm escaping that tension without an ability to or model to sustainably come out of it. My wife came out of this poverty. My wife grew up in Guatemala. Her mom left her there when she was 3 years old, came to the States, worked for 10 years to save up enough money to bring her over. She worked as an indentured servant. My wife came in and had the opportunity to go to college, get a degree, and a wonderful, wonderful wife, mother, still struggles with some of those realities of poverty, some of the lies, actually, that poverty implants. We still struggle through them together. And I remember my wife saying often, I'm just sick of being the screwed up one in our marriage. What do you say to that? And then after being at Shepherd for a little while and learning, it was actually about 6 years into our marriage, a few years ago, I came to a conclusion, a reality check for me. I came from poverty as well. I came from spiritual poverty. You see, I never grew up understanding what it was to have a relationship with Christ, to walk alongside people in active fellowship, to live into purpose that I've been called to give of my time, talent, and treasure as a greater part of all I was created to be in something that was joyful and good. I didn't have that. I mean, it was foreign to me. I mean, I went to church some, but I didn't have that. I didn't have that model. And then when I was 18, I went off to college. I had the opportunity. I was introduced to the gospel and given the invitation to come to know Christ. And that was wonderful. And at the same time, this all of a sudden there was this huge issue. Because I saw who I should be, who I was maybe created to be. And I saw who I was today. And I had no idea how to get there. No model. Nothing imparted. I might be a great astronaut, to be perfectly honest. I might have all the talents and skills, but it's like someone walking up and say, "Hey, you'd be a great astronaut." Okay. I don't know any astronauts. I don't know how to become an astronaut. I had no idea how to become a Christian. I had no idea how to live that out healthy, fully, freely. And you know what? I was angry about that. Furious. I could put on a good front if we would see each other at, you know, church or whatever. "Hey, how are you doing?" "Oh, I'm good. You know, praise the Lord." But I didn't really get it. And I knew it inside. And I didn't have the community of people around me. See, it's interesting. It's relationship that stands in the face of poverty. And so when we work with kids at Shepherd, we try to engage them in 8 relationships of adults walking alongside them. We serve about 500 families, 1,000 kids, in relationship from birth through post-secondary education, graduation, and career placement. Because we know that relationship is what immerses kids in the life model, that once they grab onto it, once they've reached that critical mass and believe it's for them, they go. And some of the outcome is that we see kids go off to college. We've had kids go to Harvard, Notre Dame, Purdue, IU, Ball State, Butler. We've had them go to the National Guard, the Army, Navy. Kids are living into their passion. We've seen them go and have ministries of their own. Curtis was homeless when he first came to Shepherd and kicked out of school. He was couch surfing at 14 years old. And is now having a ministry and a family of his own. But it's in the context of a relationship that you overcome your poverty. As a matter of fact, as I look at my poverty and spiritual poverty, when I was living there, this is exactly what described me. Hopeless. We'll call it lack of spiritual cash, resources. Absolutely. Lost. Dangerous. Yep. Lack of education and skills. Certainly. And totally desperate. 100%. I was blessed with a wife who came from spiritual wealth and has been an awesome partner in walking alongside me. We all come from some brokenness. Might be emotional, physical, spiritual, academic. And it is in fellowship and relationship of those who can come alongside and model a different reality to wholeness, to freedom in Christ, where we are healed. And that's one of the reasons I'm so excited about what you're about to undertake with the Rice and Beans Fast. Because I believe that this is a very tangible, tactile way to demonstrate living out the gospel, to live a little simpler so that others can simply live, and to share that with your families, with your neighbors, with your coworkers, with those you just naturally come in contact with. And it puts handles on it. So those can say, what's this? You know, Christianity thing all about. That's it. That is it. It gives handles to what you're doing. And honestly, the dollars you invest will absolutely make a difference. Actually, there's a recent study that we did, actually DePauw did, to say that the for every $75,000 invested in our academy, $1 million is saved to the local tax and state taxpayers. That's a big ROI. But I'm really excited for the opportunity of bringing a tangible model to the world, because the world is screaming for it. And you have the opportunity to go and have a tremendous impact there. So thank you so much. And please allow me to pray for you as we go, as you head into the week ahead and then the Rice and Beans Fest week after that. Lord, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today, for what you're doing here in this community. I pray that you give us all full hearts, clear minds, to feel your presence, to be guided by you, to see how we might be able to impart life to those around us, to minister to those that we come into contact with in our day-to-day lives, not to make everything okay, but to know and impart health and wholeness, freedom in you. We love you, Lord, and it is a blessing to be part of your purpose.
Man, there are some harsh realities of some of the things that Rex shared with us this morning. And, you know, here's the thing. There are enough resources in this world to eradicate poverty. There are enough resources in the seats in our churches in this city to remove poverty from the greater Indianapolis area. And, you know, before us is an incredible invitation that we have to be a part of that. Now, we can't all, you know, give up our job, our well-paying jobs, as Rex did. I mean, you know, he was called. Some of you may be feeling that. I mean, this may be the first step for some of us to say, man, God, you've been calling me to something bigger. You know, we're all looking for something bigger. We're looking for that thing that our life ties into. And, you know, when we begin to align with Christ, he constantly pulls us into, you know, not just the things we're tangibly doing in this world, but what is it that we're a part of that's bigger than just my life right here? And maybe God's beginning to stir that in you. But there's a lot of gap in between that and maybe where we sit today where we can jump in and actually begin to gain some traction. And so I want you to take out your connection card that Eric referred to earlier this morning. There are some next steps on here that I just want to walk us through this morning. You know, so we don't just walk out of here today and say, man, that's great. And yes, there's a problem in our community. But, you know, here's the thing. If we want to be around where Jesus is, we have to run to places like where Rex is. You know, and it's not just where Rex is, but where there is brokenness, where there is poverty, where there is oppression, where there is wickedness. It's here in our community. It's greater in the Indianapolis community. It just looks different. You know, we have to be a people. If we want to be around Jesus, I mean, Jesus joins us here in this place, but, you know, Jesus was always about being in places with people that weren't like him. Jesus was always about, you know, getting away from the religious people and getting to people that were different, that actually had problems. You know, and of course, honestly, we have problems as well. But if we want to be where Jesus is, we have to go to the places where Jesus is meeting needs. And so, you know, I want you to just think about what's my response, you know, out of today. And on the backside of your card are some next steps. And maybe you're here for the first time and you're like, man, there's just something here. I don't know exactly, God, what you're saying, but I do want to continue to be a part of this series. I want to continue to track for the next few weeks because I want to live a life that makes ripples beyond the days that I walk here on this earth. And I guarantee you, you know, if you continue to track with us on this, you're going to begin to tap into some things. You're going to leave a legacy and you're going to create ripples that will go well beyond what you have ever experienced. You know, there's some very tangible ways that you can tie in down at Shepherd. In fact, there's an opportunity to go down to Shepherd any given day of the week and have lunch over the lunch hour with kids that are looking for some of those mentors that Rex mentioned to just show them what it looks like to live differently. And if that's something that you'd be interested in doing, we're calling it a Lunch Bunch Mentor. You can mark that on your connection card, and we will sync you up with Shepherd. You can pick say, hey, I'm going to go down there one day a week or one day a month, and I'm just going to spend, you know, a half hour, 40 minutes. I'm going to have a little drive time down, a little drive time back, spend a half hour down there just hanging out with kids. That may be, Rex was sharing with me, that may be one of the most significant conversations that those kids have all week. Talk about changing the life of a kid. You know, when you get involved in changing the lives of kids, you actually change a city. Another opportunity is we've got a Sunday or a Saturday lunch or breakfast opportunity. It's not on your card, but this is very fresh in the works. We have a couple people here at Crosspoint that want to begin to go down and just prepare a meal for the men and women and families that come in for clinic services on Saturday at Shepherd Community. If you're interested in being a part of that group of 8, 10, 12 people that go down on a monthly basis, just write Saturday breakfast on your connection card. We're going to begin to develop a list. It's a tangible way you can get involved in the lives of people that are in poverty. Next week, as I said, we're going to begin Beans and Rice Week. And when you walk out of here today, you are going to receive an investment pack. It looks like this. And this is a starter kit. And this is our way of starting the process with you. Every single person that's sitting in here today can receive one of these as you walk out today. Don't do anything with it until next week because we're going to begin next week. Or if maybe you're out of town next week, then you can say, well, maybe I want to do this week. That's cool. You can do that as well. But we're going to begin the process by putting something in your hands. We're making making an investment into you so that you can in turn begin to walk out Beans and Rice Week here in a week. And so we're going to give these to you a week early. And this is just one of the tangible ways that we're saying, hey, this is a big, big way that we can get traction in our community. We can actually change the trajectory of people's lives. You know, the preschool program that Shepherd Community runs, a study was done a few years ago and found that for every $75,000 that is invested into those that preschool program through preschool scholarships and the like, that actually creates a savings of over $1 million for the city of Indianapolis. Getting kids a preschool education is one of the levers that will allow that kid, when he grows up, for his or her family to not experience the poverty that they once lived in. It's exponential return. And so, you know, as you eat on the cheap here in a week, you can actually make an enormous impact in the lives of kids for generations to come. All right, so just one of the tangible ways. So I want you to take a moment and just walk through those next steps. You know, maybe it's volunteering here. You know, listen, when you give your time, when you sacrifice your time, you know, we've got Easter coming up. It's an Easter volunteer. It's one of the greatest ways to be a part of changing somebody's poverty, whether it's a physical poverty or it's a spiritual poverty. These are all ways. Crosspoint is about, you know, helping you not just see that church is a place we come and sit, but how do we create an experience where we engage right along where Jesus is? So I want to invite you to go ahead and just mark your next step, and maybe it's talking through with your family this week, you know, how you're going to participate in Beans and Rice. Just go ahead and say, hey, here's what I'm going to do out of today. Here's what I'm declaring. And as you're doing that, I want to call Rex back up here. Come on back up here with me, Rex, because we were on Rex's website at Shepherd this past week, and we saw that they have a whole list of needs. If you want to fill some of the direct needs at Shepherd, you can go on there, and they list a bunch of the needs they have. And we saw one that we thought fit us really well. You know, because they said on there they needed toilet paper.
And we address people's crap.
And we address people's crap all the time. And so we thought, man, there is nothing better than the one better need that we could at least immediately meet other than a pallet of toilet paper. So this is going in your car when you leave, or your van.
Wonderful.
Or, we might need to get a truck to take it down.
We actually have a campaign called Wipe Out Poverty.
Wipe Out Poverty. We are doing that today. And so, you know, this is how you address. It's very tangible, right? I mean,
very
you know,
tangible.
Sometimes we think, man, I gotta live. You could live like Rex and literally change your career. That's needed too.
Sure, sure.
But there's a lot of space in between to get involved. The key is that we actually engage.
Absolutely.
And so we're wiping out poverty by toilet paper this morning. So so we're going to do that. Let me pray for us. Let's stand, and we're going to pray and sing our way out of here. God, thank you for this message today. It's been a little unsettling, if we're honest, though that's a good unsettling. Because, God, we have tons of resources in this community, and here in a week we're going to be just changing our patterns for a week to simplify in order that someone else might have a shot at abundance. We're going to take a week at sustenance level, the bare minimum, so that others can have a shot, God, of living an abundant life, of seeing that there's a God who loves them and pursues them, and what we're going to be doing here is going to be an expression of that. And so, God, we're literally getting fired up to go out and change the world, God, and I just pray that you light a fire under us and help us to see, God, how you want to engage us, those that are willing to be world changers. And so help us to do that, God. Thank you for this great message today, and God, we're just going to sing it now. In your name, amen. All right, let's get after this together.